This is cassette number 18.
Nikki swallowed. She knew. This was what she had been waiting for. Richard had been ready to give up. Then he wanted to live, and now he was willing to die for this. Nikki nodded, having to look away from those gray eyes of his. I'll wait until it's ready. Now she knew why he seemed so driven lately. That quality hinted at in her father's eyes and blazing in Richard's, she felt was somehow tied to this. The very idea was intoxicating. In more ways than one, this was a matter of life and death.
Are you sure about this, Richard?
I am. She nodded again.
All right, I will honor your request.
The next day, Nikki got an early start to buy bread. She wanted Richard to have bread with the stew she was cooking. Camille offered to go for her, but she wanted to get out of the house. She asked him to keep an eye on Richard's stew as it simmered on the banked coals. It was an overcast day, and cool, a hint of the rapidly approaching winter. The streets were crowded with people out looking for work, with carts hauling everything from manure to bolts of coarse dark cloth, and with wagons, mostly carrying building materials for the palace. She had to step carefully to avoid the dung in the road, and squeeze between all the people moving as slowly as the sludge of the open sewers as she made her way through the city. There were crowds of needy people in the street, many come to Aulturang for work, no doubt, although there were few people at the workers' group hall. The lines at the bakeries were long. At least the orders saw to it that people got bread, even if it was gray, tough bread. You had to go early, though, before they ran out. With more people all the time, the shops ran out earlier every week. Someday it was rumored they were going to be able to provide more than one kind of bread. She hoped that this day, at least, they might have some butter, too. Sometimes they sold butter. The bread and the butter were inexpensive, so she knew she could afford to buy a little for Richard if they had any. They almost never had any butter. Nikki had spent 180 years trying to help people, and people seemed no better off now than they ever were. Those in the new world were prosperous enough, though. Someday, when the order ruled the world, and those with the means were made to contribute their fair share to their fellow man, then everything would finally fall into place, and all of mankind could at last live with the dignity they deserved. The order would see to it. The bread shop stood at an intersection of two roads, so the line turned around the corner onto another street. Nikki was around that corner, leaning a shoulder against the wall, watching the passing throngs, when a face in the crowd caught her attention. Her eyes went wide as she straightened. She could hardly believe what she was seeing. What was she doing in Aulturang? Nikki didn't really want to find out. Not now. When it seemed she was getting close to finding her answers, matters seemed to be at a critical state with Richard. She felt sure that it would soon come to resolution. Nikki flipped her dark shawl up over her head of blonde hair and tied it snug under her chin. She sank back behind a wide woman and hugged the wall as she peeked out between the people in line. Nikki watched Sister Alessandra, her nose held high as her calculating gaze swept the faces of all the people on the street. She looked like a mountain lion on the prowl. Nikki knew who Alessandra was hunting. Ordinarily, Nikki would have been only too happy to cross paths with the woman, but not now. Nikki sank back against the rough clapboards, staying low behind the people ahead of her, until Sister Alessandra had vanished into the vast sea of people crowding the street. Chapter 61. As Kaylin rode out of her home city of Adendrill for the last time, she pulled her wolf fur mantle up over her shoulders for protection against the bitter wind. She recalled that the last time the weather had been about to close in for the winter was the last time she had seen Richard. With the world in such constant turmoil, and the battle burning hot, Her thoughts, by necessity, always seemed to be on urgent matters. The unexpected memory of Richard was a welcome, if bittersweet, respite from the worries of war. She took a last look before cresting the hill. To see the splendor of the Confessor's palace on the distant rise, it made her ache with a sense of home whenever she saw the soaring white marble columns and rows of tall windows. Other people were stricken with awe or fear at the sight of the palace, but Caelan's heart was always warmed by it. She had grown up there, and it was a place of many happy memories for her.
"It won't be forever, Caelan."
Caelan glanced over at Verna. "No, it won't." She wished she could believe that. "Besides," Verna said, offering a smile, "we will be denying the Imperial Order the people, and that is what they are really after. The rest is just stone and wood. What matters stone and wood if the people are safe?" Caelan, despite her desolate tears, was overcome with a smile. "You're right, Verna. That really is all that matters. Thank you for reminding me." "Don't worry, Mother Confessor," Kara said. "Verdeen and the rest of the moored Sith, along with the troops, will watch over the people and see them safely to Dahara." Caelan's smile widened. "I wish I could see Jagang's face when he finally gets here next spring to be greeted by ghosts." The season of war was drawing to an end. If the summer with Richard in their mountain home had been a wonderful dream, then the summer of endless warfare had been a nightmare. The fighting had been desperate, intense, and bloody. There were times when Caelan thought she and the army could not go on, that they were finished. Each of those times, they had managed to pull through. There were occasions when she almost welcomed death, just to have the nightmare end, just to stop seeing people in agony and pain, to stop seeing all the precious lives in ruins. Against the seemingly indomitable millions of the Imperial Order, the forces of the Daharan Empire had managed to slow the enemy enough to keep them from taking Adendril this year. With thousands of lives lost in the fighting, they had brought the hundreds of thousands of people of Adendril and other cities that lay along the path of the Order the time they needed to escape. As autumn had turned bitter, the immense force of the Imperial Order had reached a broad valley at a convergence of the Kern River and a large tributary, where the lay of the land provided space to accommodate their entire force. With winter closing in, Jagang knew better than to be caught unprepared. They had dug in while they had the opportunity. The Daharan forces had set up their defensive lines to the north, bulwarking the way to Adendril. Just as Warren had forecast, Adendril was more than Jagang's army could take in this season of war. Jagang, once again, had proven his prudent patience. He had chosen to preserve the viability of his army so he would be able to press on successfully when conditions allowed. In the short run, it gave Caelan and her forces breathing room. But in the long run, it would spell their doom. Caelan felt sweet relief that Warren's prediction of Adendril falling the following year, at least would not be at the cost of a slaughter of the city's citizens. She didn't know what hardships the people would have to endure escaping to Dahara. But it was better than the certain slavery and widespread death of remaining behind in Adendril. Some people, she knew, would refuse to leave. In cities along the Order's march up the Midlands, some people put their faith in Jagang the Just. Some people believed that the good spirits, or the Creator, would watch over them no matter what. Caelan knew they couldn't save everyone from themselves. Those who wished to live and were willing to see reason stood a chance. Those who saw only what they wished to see would, at the least, fall under the pall of the Order's domination. Caelan reached back and touched the hilt of the Sword of Truth sticking up behind her shoulder. It was comforting sometimes to touch it. The Confessor's palace was no longer her home. Home was wherever Richard and she were together. The fighting was often so intense, the fear so palpable, that there were times, days at a stretch, when she never thought of him. Sometimes she had to devote all her physical and mental effort to just staying alive one more day. Some men, feeling the war was hopeless, had deserted. Kalin could understand the way they felt. All they ever did, it seemed, was to fight for their lives against overwhelming odds as they backed their way up through the Midlands. Galia had fallen. That there was no word from any city in Galia probably said it all. They had lost Kelton, too. Many of the Keltans in Winstead, Penvero, and other cities had fled first. Most of Kelton's army were still with them, though some had rushed home in desperation. Kalin tried not to think too long on everything that had gone wrong, lest she give up. They had saved a good many people, gotten them out of the way of the order, at least for the time being. It was the best they could do. Along the long retreat north, tens of thousands of their joint forces had lost their lives in the fierce battles. The Order had lost many times that number. In the high summer heat, the Order had lost 250,000 men to fever alone. It made little difference. They continued to grow and to roll onward. Kalin recalled the things Richard had told her, that they could not win, that the New World was going to fall to the Order, and if they resisted, it would only cause greater bloodshed. She was reluctantly coming to understand that hopeless outlook. She feared she was only getting people killed to no good end, yet giving up still was out of the question for her. Kalin looked over her shoulder, past the long column of men escorting her, past the trees and up the mountain, to the great dark mass of the Wizard's Keep looming up on the mountain overlooking Adendril. Zed would have to go there. They could not stop the Imperial Order from having Adendril, but they dared not let them have the keep. It was dusk, 10 days later, when Kalin and her company rode back into the Dharan camp. It was obvious from the first instant that something was wrong. Men were running through the camp, swords drawn. Others were rushing pole weapons to the barricades. Men were donning leather and chainmail as they ran to their posts. It was a tense scene, but one Kalin had seen repeated so often that it seemed almost routine. "I wonder what this is all about," Verna said with a scowl. "I'll not like it if Jagang spoils my dinner." Kalin, not wearing her leather armor, suddenly felt naked. It was uncomfortable to wear on long rides, so going through friendly territory, she had tied it to her saddle. Kara moved close as they dismounted. They handed the reins to soldiers as men closed in protectively. Kalin couldn't remember what color cloth would be used to mark the command tents. She had lost track of the exact number of days she had been gone. It had been somewhat over a month. She took the arm of an officer among the men who had swept in around her. "Where are the commanders?" He pointed with his sword. "Down that way, Mother Confessor." "Do you know what's going on?" "No, Mother Confessor. The alarm sounded. As a sister rushed past, I heard her say it was genuine." "Do you know where my sisters or Warren are?" Verna asked the officer. "I've seen sisters running around everywhere, prelate. I've not seen Wizard Warren." Darkness was settling in, leaving only the fires to guide them through the camp. Most of the fires, though, had been doused at the alarm, so the camp was becoming a black maze. Horses with Dharan riders flashed past, headed out on patrol. Foot soldiers raced out of camp to scout. No one seemed to know what the threat was, but that wasn't unusual. Besides being frequent and varied, attacks were usually confusing, in addition to being frightening. It was over an hour before Kalin, Kara, Verna, and their heavy ring of guards made it through the sprawling camp that was the size of a city to the officers' tents. None of the officers were there. "This is a foolish way to go about it," Kalin muttered. She found her tent with Spirit standing on the little table and tossed her saddlebags inside along with her armor. "Let's just wait here so people can find us." "I agree," Verna said. Kalin gestured to include a number of the group of men who had set up a defensive guard around her. "Spread out and find the officers. Tell them that the Mother Confessor and the prelate are at the command tents. We'll wait here for reports."
"Tell any sisters you see," Verna added. "And if you see Warren or Zed,
Tell them, too, that we have returned."
The men raced off into the night to carry out their instructions. "I don't like this," Kara muttered.
"I don't either," Kaelin said as she stepped into her tent.
Kara stood guard, along with a small army of men, as Kaelin took off her fur mantle and slipped on her leather armor. It had saved her from taking wounds often enough that she was not shy about wearing it. All it would take was one man to slip up close and thrust a sword into her, and that might well be the end. If she got lucky, and they ran it through a leg or even her belly, she had a chance of being healed by a sister. But if it was in some other place, heart, head, some major artery, so that the loss of blood was too fast, then even the gifted wouldn't be able to heal her. The leather was extremely tough, and while not impervious to blades, spears, or arrows, it afforded a good degree of protection while allowing enough freedom of movement to enable her to fight. A blow with a blade had to be landed just right, or it would glance harmlessly off the leather. Many of the men wore chainmail, which afforded better protection, but it was too heavy for Kaelin to be practical for her to wear. In combat, speed and maneuverability were life. Kaelin knew better than to risk her life needlessly. She was more valuable to their cause in her capacity as a leader than as a combatant. Still, while she rarely went directly into combat, the fighting had often enough come to her. A sergeant finally arrived to give her a report. "Assassins," was all he said. That one chilling word was enough. It was what she had figured, and explained the state of the camp.
"How many casualties?" Kaelin asked.
"I only know for sure that one attacked Captain Zimmer. He was eating at a campfire with his men. The captain managed to miss a killing blow, but took a nasty wound in the leg. He's lost a lot of blood. The surgeons are seeing to him right now."
"What about the assassin?" Verna asked.
The sergeant looked surprised at the question. "Captain Zimmer killed the assassin." He screwed up his face with a distaste of the rest of what he had to say.
"The assassin was dressed in a Daharan uniform. He walked through the camp without notice until he found a target, Captain Zimmer, and attacked."
Verna let out a worried breath. "A sister might be able to help the captain."
Kaelin dismissed him with a nod. The sergeant saluted with a fist to his heart before rushing off to his duties. It was then that Kaelin spotted Zed approaching. The front of his robes was wet and dark, undoubtedly with blood. Tears ran down his face. Goose flesh tingled up Kaelin's arms and legs. Verna gasped when Zed suddenly saw her and for an instant faltered before rushing toward them. Verna clutched Kaelin's arm. Zed seized Verna's hand.
"Hurry!"
was all he said. It was all he needed to say. They all understood. Verna let out a mournful cry as she was pulled along after the old wizard. Kaelin and Kara ran behind as Zed led them on a winding charge through the confusion of shouting men, galloping horses, squads in formation dashing in every direction, and unit officers taking roll call. The roll call was needed because the assassins were in Daharan uniforms, so they could sneak up close to their quarry. It was necessary to account for every man in order to single out those who didn't belong. It was tedious and difficult, but essential. They rushed into the swirl of turmoil around the tents where wounded men were being treated. Men shouted orders as others brought in men crying out in pain, or men with their limp arms dragging the ground. Each tent could hold up to 10 or 12 men. Verna's composure was frayed with panic. Zed stopped her, holding her by her arms. His voice was choked with emotion.
"A man stabbed Holly. Warren was nearby and tried to protect the girl. Verna, I swear to you on my dead wife's soul, I did everything I could do. Dear spirits, forgive me, but I must be the one to tell you. He is beyond my power to help him. He asked for you and Kaelin."
Kaelin stood in a stupor, her heart in her throat. Zed's hand on her back urged her to move quickly. She followed Verna, ducking into the tent. Half a dozen dead men lay at the far end of the tent, covered with blankets. Here and there a bloody hand stuck out from under a cover. One man was missing a boot. Kaelin stared, unable to make her mind work, unable to understand how the soldier had lost a boot. It seemed so silly, dying and losing a boot. Tragedy and comedy together under a shroud. Warren lay on his back, on a pallet on the ground. Sister Philippa was on the far side of him, her tall frame bent over the youthful wizard holding his hand. Sister Phoebe was on the near side, holding his other hand. Both women turned tear-stained faces up to see Verna above them.
"Warren," Sister Philippa said, "it's Verna. She's here. And Kaelin, too."
The two sisters quickly moved out of the way for Verna and Kaelin to take their places. They covered their mouths to hold in their cries as they fled the tent. Warren was as white as the stacks of clean bandages lying nearby. His eyes were open wide as he stared up, as if he could no longer see. His curly blonde hair was matted in sweat. His robes were soaked in blood.
"Warren," Verna moaned. "Oh, Warren!"
"Verna? Kaelin?"
he asked in a breathy whisper.
"Yes, my love."
Verna kissed his hand a dozen times. Kaelin squeezed his other limp hand.
"I'm here too, Warren. I had to hold on till you both came back, to tell you both."
"Tell us what, Warren?"
Verna asked through her tears.
"Kaelin,"
he whispered.
She leaned in. "I'm here, Warren. Don't try to talk, just—" "Listen to me."
Kaelin pressed his hand to her cheek.
"I'm listening, Warren. Richard is right. His vision. I had to tell you."
Kaelin didn't know what to say. A smile came to his ashen face.
"Verna."
"What is it, my love?"
"I love you. Always have."
Verna could hardly get her words past her choking tears.
"Warren, don't die. Don't die. Please don't die."
"Give me a kiss,"
Warren whispered.
"While I still live. And don't mourn what ends, but what a good life we've had. Kiss me, my love."
Verna bent over him and met his lips with hers, giving him a gentle, loving kiss as her tears dripped onto his face. Unable to bear the scene, Kaelin staggered out of the tent, finding Zed's protective arms waiting. She hid her weeping against his shoulder.
"What are we doing?" she cried. "What's it all for? What good is any of it? We're losing everything."
Zed had no answer for her tears at the futility of it all. The minutes dragged on. Kaelin forced herself to be strong, to be the mother confessor. She couldn't let the men see her giving up. Silent men stood nearby, not wanting to look in the direction of the tent where Warren lay dying. When General Myford materialized out of the darkness, the relief on Kara's face was evident. He rushed up close to Kara, but didn't touch her.
"I'm glad to see you safely returned," he said to Kaelin. "How is Warren?"
Kaelin couldn't speak. Zed shook his head.
"I didn't think he would live this long. I think he held on so he could see his wife."
The general nodded sorrowfully.
"We caught the man who did it."
Kaelin came to full attention.
"Bring him to me," she growled.
Without hesitation, the general hurried off to retrieve the assassin. When Kaelin gestured, Kara went with him.
"What did he say to you?"
Zed asked in a quiet voice so that others wouldn't hear.
"He wanted to tell you something."
Kaelin took a purging breath.
"He said, Richard is right."
Zed looked away in forlorn misery. Warren was his friend. Kaelin never knew Zed to take a liking to anyone the way he had taken to Warren. They shared things she knew she could never understand. Despite his young appearance, Warren was over 150 years old, close to the same age as Verna. To Zed, who was always looked up to as the wise old wizard, it must have been a particular comfort to share wizardly matters with one who understood such things, instead of constantly needing explanation and direction.
"He said the same to me,"
Zed whispered tearfully. "Why didn't Warren use his gift?" Kaelin asked. Zed wiped a finger across his cheek.
"He was walking past, just as the man seized and stabbed Holly. Perhaps the assassin couldn't find his target, or maybe he became lost and confused, or he could have just panicked and decided to stab someone, and Holly was handy at that moment."
Kaelin wiped her hands back across her cheeks. Maybe he had been told to look for a wizard in such robes, and when he saw Warren, he stabbed Holly to cause a commotion so he could get at Warren.
"That could be. Warren doesn't really know. It all happened in an instant. Warren was right there, and just reacted. I asked, but he didn't know why he didn't use his power. Perhaps in that terrible flash of the knife, he feared to kill Holly in the process, since the man had her and was stabbing her. His instinct to save her just caused him to snatch for the knife. It was a fatal mistake."
"Maybe Warren simply hesitated before using his power." Zed shrugged painfully.
"A split-second hesitation has been the end of a lot of wizards."
"If I hadn't hesitated," Kaelin said as she stared off into bitter memories, "Nikki wouldn't have had me. She wouldn't have Richard now."
"Don't try to fix the past, dear one. It can't be done."
"What about the future?" Zed's gaze sought hers.
"Meaning?"
"Remember at the end of last winter, when we left camp, when the order began moving, when Zed nodded," she went on. "Warren pointed at this place on the map. He said we had to be here to stop the order."
"Are you suggesting he knew he would die here?"
"You tell me."
"I'm a wizard, not a prophet."
"But Warren is." When he said nothing, Kaelin asked in a whisper, "What about Holly?"
"I don't know. I was just arriving to talk to Warren. It had just happened. Soldiers were jumping the man. Warren yelled orders for them not to kill him. I guess he was thinking the assassin might have valuable information. I saw Holly bleeding from her wounds in shock. I immediately had Warren brought in here and started to work on him. Sisters rushed in and took Holly to another tent."
Zed's heartsick gaze sank to the cold ground.
"I did everything I know to do. It wasn't enough."
Kaelin enclosed his shoulders protectively in her arm. "It was out of your hands from the first, Zed." It was disorienting to see her source of strength in a state of such painful weakness. It was irrational to expect him to be unemotional and strong in such circumstances, but it was still disconcerting. In that moment, Kaelin was overcome with a sense of all the loss Zed had suffered in his life. It was all there in his wet hazel eyes. Men made way for the returning General Myford and Kara. Behind them, two burly soldiers had a wiry young man, little more than a boy, really. He was muscular, but no match for the men who had him. His hair tumbled down across a forehead above dark, contemptuous eyes. He wore a proud sneer. "So," the lad said, trying to sound tough, "I guess that in my service to the Order I knifed someone important. That makes me a hero of the Order." "Make him kneel before the Mother Confessor," General Myford said with quiet command. The two soldiers kicked the back of the young man's knees to take him down. He snickered as he knelt before her. "So, you're the big, important whore I've heard so much about. Too bad you weren't around. I'd have loved to have cut you.
I guess I showed some people I'm pretty good with a knife.
So, in my absence, Kalin said, you cut a child instead.
Just for practice. I'd have cut a lot more people if these big dumb oxen wouldn't have lucked into jumping me, but I still did my duty to the Order and the Creator.
It was the bravado of someone who knew he was about to pay the ultimate price for his actions. He was trying to convince himself that he had fulfilled a valuable service. He wanted to die a hero and then go straight to the Creator for his reward in the afterlife. Verna emerged from the tent. There was no hurry in her movements. Her face was ashen and drawn. Kalin took hold of her arm, ready to help if Verna should need it. Verna stopped when she saw the young man on his knees.
"This is him?" she asked.
Kalin put her other hand tenderly to Verna's back, silently offering support.
"This is him," Kalin confirmed.
"That's right," the lad sneered up at Verna. "I'm the one who knifed the enemy wizard. I'm a hero. The Order will bring relief and justice to the people, and I help do it. Your kind is always trying to keep us down."
"Keep you down," Verna repeated in a dead tone.
"Those who are born with all the luck and advantages, they never want to share. I waited, but no one ever gave me a chance in life until the Order did. I'm a hero of downtrodden people everywhere. I've struck a blow against the oppressors of mankind. I've helped bring justice to those who are never given a chance. I killed an evil man. I'm a hero."
The silence of everyone nearby was all the more grim with the backdrop of activity going on as men searched the camp for other assassins. Officers called out names, getting quick replies. Troops searching for invaders trotted through the night, their chain mail and weapons jingling like thousands of tiny bells. The man on his knees grinned at Verna.
"The Creator will give me my reward in the next life. I'm not afraid to die. I've earned eternity in his everlasting light."
Verna passed her gaze among the eyes of all those gathered.
"I don't care what you do to him," she said, "but I want to hear his screams the entire night. I want this camp to hear his screams the entire night. I want the Order's scouts to hear his screams. That will be my tribute to Warren."
The young man licked his lips, realizing things weren't going as he had expected.
"That isn't fair!" the young assassin shouted in protest.
Panic began to tremble through his body. He had been prepared for a martyr's death, a quick end. This was something unforeseen.
"He died quick. I should have the same consideration. This isn't fair."
"Fair? What isn't fair," Verna said with terrible calmness, "is that your mother ever opened her legs for your father. We shall now belatedly correct her mistake. What isn't fair is that a good and kind man died at the hands of a sniveling little coward, so lacking in sense that he is incapable of recognizing the lies he now spews out at us. You wish to trade your life for the one you have taken? You wish to die in a cause you foolishly believe to be noble? You shall have your wish, young man. But before you die, you shall fully understand what it is you have surrendered, how precious is your life, and how utterly wasted. You shall come to regret your mother's act of creation as much as do we."
Verna swept a look of finality over the group watching.
"This is my wish. Please see to its execution."
Kara took a step forward.
"Let me do it, then."
Her grim face held no hint of relish.
"I would be best at carrying out your wish as you intended, Verna."
The lad laughed hysterically.
"A woman? You all think you're going to have some big blonde bitch try to teach me a lesson? You're all as crazy as I've heard."
Verna nodded.
I will be indebted to you, Kara. She started to leave, but paused. Don't let him die before morning, when I will come to witness it. I wish to look into his eyes and see if this young man has come to understand the nature of reality and its lack of fairness before he forfeits his life for nothing of worth and for his part in a great evil. I promise you, Kara said softly to Verna, that even though this night will seem forever to you in your grief, it will be infinitely longer for him. Verna simply touched Kara's shoulder in appreciation on her way past. After Verna had walked off into the darkness, Kara turned to Kaelin. I would ask to use a tent. No one should have to see what I do to him. His screams will be knowledge enough. As you wish.
Mother Confessor!
The young man struggled frantically, but the soldiers had him in a firm grip.
If you're so good as you claim, then show me mercy!
Drool ran from the corner of the boy's mouth and hung swinging in rhythm with his panting. But I have, Kaelin said. I am allowing you to suffer the sentence Verna has named, and not the one I would impose. Kara snapped her fingers and pointed at the young man as she marched off. The soldiers dragged the shrieking boy after her.
The others we captured, the general asked Kaelin.
Kaelin started for her tent. Cut their throats. Chapter 62 Kaelin sat up when she realized that she didn't hear the distant screams any longer. It was still hours till dawn. Maybe his heart had stopped unexpectedly. No, Kara was Mord Sith and was well-trained in what Mord Sith did. As she had lain fully dressed in her bed, listening to the blood-curdling screams aching for Verna, missing Warren, sweat had occasionally beaded her brow whenever she thought about how Richard had once been the one under a Mord Sith's aegis. To banish the uninvited ghastly images invading her thoughts, she looked up at Spirit. The lamp hanging from the ridgepole cast a warm light on the carving, stressing the graceful lines of her flowing robes, her fisted hands, her head thrown back. No matter how many times Kaelin looked at the statue, she never tired of it. Every time it was a thrill. Richard had chosen this view of life over the terrible bitterness he could have fallen into. Clinging to such bitterness would only have robbed him of his ability to experience happiness. Kaelin heard a commotion outside. Just as she sprang to her feet, Kara poked her head in through the flap Kaelin had left open. The Mord Sith's blue eyes were in a lethal rage. She stepped into the tent, pulling the lad behind by a fistful of his hair. He shook as he blinked frantically, blinded by the blood in his eyes. Gritting her teeth, Kara shoved him. He fell to the dirt at Kaelin's feet. "What's this about?" Kaelin asked. The look in Kara's eyes revealed a woman at the edge of a feral fury, at the edge of control, at the far-distant reaches of what it was to even be human. She was treading the soil of another world, madness. Kara dropped to her knees and seized the young man by the hair. She yanked him back up and held him against her red leather-clad body as she pressed her aegis to his throat. He choked and coughed, blood froth from his mouth. "Tell her," Kara growled. He held his hands out to the sides in surrender.
I know him! I know him!"
Kaelin frowned down at the terrified young man. "You know who?"
"Richard Cipher! I know Richard Cipher and his wife, Nikki!"
Kaelin felt as if the world crashed down around her. The weight of that world sank her to her knees before Kara's charge. "What is your name?"
"Gadi. I'm Gadi."
Kara pressed her aegis into his back, causing him to let loose a wild scream. She slammed his face to the ground. Kaelin held a hand out.
"Kara, wait. We need to talk to him."
"I know. I'm just making sure he wants to talk to us."
Kaelin had never seen Kara quite like this, unleashed this way. This was more than doing as Verna asked. This was personal to Kara. Warren had been someone she liked. But worse for Gadi, Richard was Kara's life. The moored Sith pulled him upright again. Red bubbles grew around his broken nose. When the light caught Kara just right, Kaelin could see blood glistening on the red leather.
"Now, I want you to tell the Mother Confessor everything."
He was nodding as he wept, and before Kara had even completed the command,
"I lived there, where they came to live. I lived where Richard and his wife—"
"Nikki,"
Kaelin corrected.
"Yes, Nikki."
He didn't understand what she meant. "They came to live in a room in our house. My friends and I didn't like him. Then Camille and Nabi started talking to him. They started liking Richard. I was angry."
He fell to such blubbering that he couldn't finish. Kaelin seized his jaw, slick with blood, and shook his face.
"Talk, or I'll have Kara start in again."
"I don't know what to say. What you want?" he sobbed.
"Everything you know about him and Nikki. Everything,"
Kaelin yelled inches from his face. "Tell her the rest of it," Kara said in his ear as she pulled him to his feet. Kaelin followed him up, fearing to miss a precious word.
"Richard started to get people to fix up the place. He works for Ishak at the transport company. When he came home at night, he would fix things. He showed Camille and Nabi how to fix things. I hated him."
"You hated him because he made things better?"
"He made Camille and Nabi and others think they could do things for themselves, when they can't. People can't do for themselves. That's a cruel deception. People have to be helped by those with the ability. It's their duty. Richard should have made things better because he could. He shouldn't have made Camille and Nabi and the others think they could change their lives for themselves. No one can do that. The people need help, not such heartless and unfeeling expectations. I found out Richard was working at night. He was hauling extra loads for greedy people. He was making money he shouldn't be allowed to make. Then, one night I was sitting on the steps, and I heard Nikki get mad at Richard. She came out to me on the steps and asked me to have sex with her. Women always want me. She was a whore, no better than the rest, despite all her airs. She told me that Richard wasn't man enough to take care of her, and she wanted me to have her because he wouldn't. I gave it to her good, just the way she wanted it. I gave it to the whore good. I hurt her good, just like she deserved."
With all her strength, Kaelin rammed her knee into his groin. Gadi doubled over, unable to draw his breath. His eyes rolled up in his head, and he went down hard.
Kara smiled. "I thought you might like to hear that part."
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.